The last time I spoke on Sunday morning, we spoke about the Sabbath and the importance of it. Just to recap and bring back to your mind what we were talking about, one of the things we said is that the Sabbath is a time to change focus, to leave the focus on daily life, survival if you like, and to focus on something or someone else, and that's God. We also said that it was a time for recalibration where the values and priorities that we had are brought back into line with how they should be. We talked a little bit about how things can sort of wander away from what they've been set at. And we can find that through the things that we experience and go through in the week. And the Sabbath, the Sunday, is a chance to recalibrate. We also said that it was a time for getting a new perspective, a fresh perspective. We can get so absorbed with everyday life that that's all we're thinking about, that's all we're looking to. But the Sabbath puts other things into our vision and brings things back into perspective. And what I'd like to do this morning is sort of develop and go on from there. Now, I'm straying a little bit outside my area of experience, if you like, but apparently Hebrew words are built on three-letter roots, okay? And some of the words with similar roots, up to two letters or so, are related. Now, in Hebrew, Sabbath is Shabbat. And a word that has certainly shares two of those letters is a word that is hopefully pronounced Shabbat. So you got the start of the Shabbat, but it's just the last letter that is different. And that actually means to take captive, to captivate, or as a progression from that, to take as a bride. Now, the marriage relationship is something which God takes very seriously. And God says in many ways that our relationship with him is like a marriage, and we can see that in the terms that the Bible uses to describe marriage and our relationship to him. In Isaiah 61 verse 10, this is what it says. I delight greatly in the Lord. My soul rejoices in my God, for he has clothed me with garments of salvation and arrayed me in a robe of righteousness. As a bridegroom adorns his head like a priest, and as a bride adorns herself with the jewels. Now, clothing is necessary, but some of the clothes we wear are more than necessity. Some clothes signify a position, a status. Some clothes are simply there for decoration. You know, you don't actually need it to look like a wonderful ball gown. You could have just an ordinary dress. You don't need to be dressed up in this sort of magnificent suit. You could just wear a t-shirt and jeans. But there are times when we wear other clothes for other purposes. Sometimes we wear the clothes to show the situation we're in or to fit in with the situation we're in, but also to show the status that we hold. Some clothes adorn and beautify. Mm. And there it's saying, as a bride and groom go to great lengths to be the best that they can be, that's how God's salvation is with us. In Isaiah 62 verses 45, it talks about the relationship. This is God speaking. He says, no longer will they call you deserted or name your land desolate, but you will be called Hephzibah, or translated, that means my delight is in her, and your land Beulah, or to be translated, married. You will be called my delight, and your land will be called married. For the Lord will take delight in you, and your land will be married. As a young man marries a young woman, so will your builder marry you. As a bridegroom rejoices over his bride, so will your God rejoice over you. God's relationship with his chosen is one of delight. God's idea is to have us as close as can be. Such is his love. We see the comparison of relationship in Jeremiah 2 verses 1 to 2 where it says this. The word of the Lord came to me. Go and proclaim in the hearing of Jerusalem, this is what the Lord says. I remember the devotion of your youth, how as a bride you loved me and followed me through the wilderness, through a land not sown. We see a similar thing also in Ezekiel chapter 16 and verse 8 where it says this. Again, God speaking says, later I passed by, and when I looked at you and saw that you were old enough for love, I spread the corner of my garment over you and covered your naked body. I gave you my solemn oath and entered into a covenant with you, declares the sovereign Lord, and you became mine. The seriousness of the marriage covenant is reflective of our relationship with God. We see that also in the fact that God takes adultery so very, very seriously. Part of the Ten Commandments is that one that says, you shall not commit adultery. It's right there at the start, part of the covenant. God views marriage very seriously and very important. Breaking of the marriage vows is a very important thing, a very serious thing. It's important in itself. But it's important also because it reflects the divine relationship. We see again in chapter 3, verses 6 to 8, the comparison of relationships where it says, during the reign of King Josiah, the Lord said to me, have you seen what faithless Israel has done? She has gone up on every high hill and under every spreading tree and has committed adultery there. I thought that after she had done all this, she would return to me, but she did not, and her unfaithful sister Judah saw it. I gave faithless Israel her certificate of divorce and sent her away because of all her adulteries. Yet I saw that her unfaithful sister Judah had no fear. She also went out and committed adultery. We see there the comparison of the relationship with God with the relationship of marriage. We see it written large through the book of Hosea, which starts in chapter 1, verse 2 with this. When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, go marry a promiscuous woman and have children with her. For like an adulterous wife, this land is guilty of unfaithfulness to the Lord. There we see the wedding scenario, the situation and the setting. We also see it in a parable that Jesus told in Matthew chapter 25, verses 1 to 13. It says this, at that time the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish and five were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps but did not take any oil with them. The wise ones, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time coming and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight, the cry rang out, here, the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise ones, give us some of your oil. Our lamps are going out. No, they replied, there may not be enough for both of us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy for yourselves. But while they were on the way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins were ready. They went in and met with him in the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others also came. Lord, Lord, they said, open the door to us. But he replied, truly, I tell you, I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. We see the comparison there of the return of Jesus with the idea of a wedding feast. It's a very special event. It's a very serious event. In John 14, 1 to 2, we have the words of Jesus where speaking to the disciples, he says, do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I am going to prepare a place for you? And that idea of going to prepare a place is linked again to the idea of the bridegroom going away to prepare the home, the wedding home, the marriage home. We see as well in 2 Corinthians 11, 1 to 2, the idea of the church as a bride. Paul writing there says, I hope you will put up with me in a little foolishness. Yes, please put up with me. I am jealous for you with a godly jealousy. I promised you to one husband, to Christ, so that I might present you as a pure virgin to him. In Ephesians 5, we have the words there, 25 to 33, where it says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated their own body, but they feed and care for their body just as Christ loves his church, for we are members of his body. For this reason, man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you must also love his wife as he loves himself. The wife must respect her husband. Again, we see the comparison of the relationships, and another reason why marriage in biblical form is so important, as it echoes the relationship with Christ. God loves his church. It's not too far, it's not too extreme to say that God is besotted with his church. We see in Revelation the idea of the new heaven and the new earth coming down, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for a husband. It says there, come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. And he carried me away in a spirit to a mountain great and high and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming out of heaven from God. And as a bridegroom delights in his bride, so God delights in his church. And as a bridegroom delights in her bride, God delights in you. Each of us, each one of us, were held in high esteem. We're held to be of great value, of great worth. We're held to be irreplaceable. We're held to be a treasure. We're someone, we are something that is worth to God everything. Well, that might be all very well, but what has that got to do with the Sabbath? A married couple live together in everyday life, but there are occasions when they just want time with each other. They just want time together with no distractions, to give each other their full attention. Sometimes we call it a date night or a date day. But they just want to be in each other's company. They want time to talk, perhaps deeper than they do on that ordinary everyday level. They want time to relax with each other, just to be in each other's company, to enjoy each other, to delight in each other. And this is another aspect of the Sabbath, because that's how the church, the bride of Christ, is with God. It's a time for God and his people to enjoy being in each other's company. It's a time to delight in each other. The Lord with his church. No distractions. The sole focus. It's simple. It's straightforward. And it's not complicated. It's simply a fact that those who love each other want to be with each other. Enjoy being with each other and revel in each other's presence. The Sabbath is a time to change our focus, to refocus. The Sabbath is a time to recalibrate. The Sabbath is a time for getting perspective. It's also a time to enjoy having the one we love among us. It's a time to enjoy simply being with the one that we love.